I am Greg Schaefer. Welcome to the virtual CISO moment. Simon Janin joins us today. He is the founder and CEO of X80. X80 helps companies understand their cybersecurity risks and prioritize the most effective solutions by quantifying the potential financial impact of each threat in dollars. Simon, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Greg. It's great to be here.
And I already did a fail on this podcast. I forgot to verify the pronunciation of your name. I hope I got it right.
You did great.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, again, thank you so much for joining on. Would love to hear a little bit about your journey, how and why you got started in cyber, and what led you to eventually being the founder of X80.
Absolutely. So I started programming when I was 13, and I was very interested in how computers worked. I started hacking them, trying to see how I could make them do stuff that they were not supposed to do, just because I was testing the boundaries as a teenager. And when I was 19, I got drafted into military intelligence and a special cyber unit in my country. And that showed me a different side of the world. And then I went on to study computer science. I created a cryptographic protocol that was published. And then I worked in fintech and I built some secure protocols. And eventually it just became obvious that I wanted to create my own company really from the start. And I went to Entrepreneur First, which is a talent investor where you meet your co-founder. And it just became obvious that cyber was the thing. Just looking at my life backwards, I've actually been doing that for more than half of my life, and one thing led to another, and I founded X80.
And so, talk a little bit about what X80 does, if you don't mind. I'm very much ping on the idea of quantifying the potential financial impact of each threat in dollars. So this sounds like it's a quantification of risk model type system.
That's correct. So there are actually two sides to it. But when it comes to quantifying risk, maybe just why do we want to do that? So why is looking at CVEs or, you know, the level of vulnerabilities as numbers, or looking at them with colors or with criticalities or all those quantitative words, why is that not sufficient? Well, it's because if you look at any company in the world that has more than a few hundred employees, they just have thousands, if not tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of vulnerabilities. So if everything is red, nothing's red. Mm-hmm. And at some point, it's really about the impact to the business and their customers. Because a lot of vulnerabilities can get exploited, and in the end, nothing comes after that. It's maybe a system that's isolated and the hacker is alone in a box, no damage done. Or it's very minimal. It's not even something you need to report. But in some other cases, some breaches, they can kill a business. And that's where the quantification is necessary, because if you understand that this is $1 billion risk or $1 million risk or $1,000 risk, you should do different things. And some of them you just can't avoid it. You may get hacked, but you can definitely make sure to invest all your resources, time and energy into the most critical risk, such that if you ever get hacked, you don't make the news.
Well, I know that can be such a difficult environment to be in. You mentioned that if you have all of these vulnerabilities, these risks that you're rating as high, where do you start? And without having some sort of methodology to prioritize that, besides just the old qualitative method of just like, well, I feel that one is higher, or I feel that one is higher. So you're actually applying some real numbers to the risks in order to help with that prioritization. Is that correct?
That's absolutely right. And essentially, there are models about risk. So what is the attacker most likely to do? And there are also models about, if he actually does that, what is the impact on us, the company? Mm-hmm. Because in the end, that gets into the topic of game theory, where just like in chess or in any game you may play, like poker, you have, in that case, two players, and they may have different incentives. So for example, like the attacker, what he wants to do is maximize his profits. Unless he's an activist or a government, which are like slightly different cases, but that also similar, most attackers that you're going to face, they want to maximize profit. So they look at your company like a more or less tasty meal. Mm-hmm. Some of you are very tasty. Some of you are not that tasty. And it's not, you don't get hacked, not because you're secure, just because you're not that tasty. And but those who are tasty, well, there's something that makes them tasty. So it could be you have personally identifiable information, and that can be sold for a lot of money, or that can be used to make fraud and create a lot of downstream money from that. Or it could be medical data, or it could be some form of intellectual property that could be resold to a competitor, or it could be just used to servers. Or if you're an AI company, maybe you have weights that can give you an advantage. And essentially all the assets that you have, that you value, that your investors value in your company, this is something that can likely be used for an attacker to benefit from. And if you're tasty, if you have those assets that they want, well, they're gonna deploy the resources necessary in order to get them. But they will only do so if the return on investment for them is worth it. Because they're not going to invest $1 million to make $1 million.
Right.
If they can invest $10,000 to make $200,000, that's a 20x ROI, and that's a very good deal to them.
So if the bad guys are doing a quantitative analysis, it only makes sense that we as defenders should do a quantitative analysis as well too, it sounds like. I mean, that just makes sense. Well, going to come back in just a moment, and I want to ask you about your opinion about small and mid-sized businesses. I know you're more in the larger business space, but there are some things that translate up and down, including potentially quantitative risks. But I'm going to ask you what you think are like one or two of the most significant threats to small and mid-sized businesses in cyber in just a moment. VCSO Services is a small, specialized, veteran-owned information security firm with a calling, founded on Christian values and focused on the needs of small and mid-sized businesses. Our passion is to help small and mid-sized businesses gain a fighting chance in an increasingly hostile cybersecurity threat environment by providing executive, part-time, virtual CISO services, information security risk management services, and CISO advisory services. Check them out at vcsoservices.com. Simon, what do you think is one of the, in your opinion, based on your experience at this point in time, one of the most significant threats to small and mid-sized businesses, cybersecurity?
I think that's an excellent question and a really important topic. So I would maybe split it in two. I'd say for startups, it's just lack of time. And because they just don't have time, you know, like their biggest risk is to survive. It's not to die next year. And so sometimes they struggle to prioritize securing the company, which can lead to terrific, really terrible like downstream effects. But when it comes to more general, like small and medium businesses, let's say maybe some medical practice or something like that, it's just that they don't have the skills and they're typically a bit older of a demographic, and they don't have the understanding about those systems, and they use very old systems, and they have processes that just are hard to change. And so they're very resistant to change. While a startup, if you show them the way, they will be really willing to change, but it needs to be a higher risk than the risk of dying. So I think some startups, they just struggle so much because that's just the game of the startup, that sometimes they just can't justify spending time on it. And sometimes it can have bad consequences for them, but it's understandable.
And that's really an interesting point that I never really considered before. So my firm, we provide virtual CISO services, so part-time chief information security officer to businesses of various sizes, and we have on occasion worked with startups, which I realize a lot of VCSOs do as well too, and that it's important for the VCSO to understand that the greatest risk, I love this concept, the greatest risk to a startup is just staying alive. And sometimes when we come in, we don't do a good job of understanding, we try to understand the business risk, but starting right out the gate that you are up against that biggest risk, and that it's okay then that if they're taking other risks with security just to be able to survive to the next day and get to the next stage, I think that that's a huge point of understanding that a lot of practitioners in my space miss.
I mean, I've been guilty of that myself, but you know, I've been both helping startups in security, and I'm also a startup founder. So at some point I had to understand it, not because I wanted to, but just because the reality was stronger than my thoughts, than what I wish things, how things should be, you know. And also seeing that a lot of startup founders and executives, they are very smart people. Mm-hmm. So even though they don't know a lot about security, they really need to be educated, and it's just that they have a head full of different things that they're trying to do. And so I think, yeah, this empathy towards them and really trying to understand their business risk and what's really most important for them, which most of the time is just, yeah, closing more sales. So if you can actually help them close more deals, then you hit right at the top of the priority list. But if it's like not getting hacked, it's like, well, okay, we have some customer data, but maybe we don't have to say it, to tell it to our customers, which I know it's not very ethical, but they're trying to survive. So that's not their priority sometimes, which sad, but it's the way it is.
Well, and you sort of already answered the next question that was coming up in my head, because I'm trying to get ahead of you and you're getting ahead of me. So that's pretty cool. But it's I would want to be able, if I'm like totally convinced, okay, look, this is a very serious risk to your company, and I know that your biggest risk is not being able to survive, but I think that this could be a deal killer. I need to get in, and I need to get into your smart head and understand and help you understand why. You already hit a lot of the points that I think that we could use as tools, is the empathy to the business, understanding what the business needs are, and maybe leading with that hand. It's like, I understand that we need to focus on sales. We need to ensure that our cash flow is positive at this point in time or somewhere along those lines. But if we do have an issue, this is what that's going to mean. So I almost think now this almost dovetails back to quantitative risk, because I always talk about with quantitative risk, the importance that it is to security practitioners like myself is that it you're speaking the business language. You're like the business leaders, they don't, I know that they like colors, red, yellow, and green. That's great. Everybody likes colors. But so what? But if you tell them dollars, then suddenly it's like, oh, I understand now. Because that's really all business is. Business is that by the end of the day, you have more here than what you laid out. Like you said, bad guy wouldn't want to pay $1 million in order to make $1 million. So let me flip back now to, because I love talking about quantitative risk, to talking about X80. What makes your product, your service, different as far, because I know that there are different products out there with regards to quantifying risk and telling that story to the C-suite about the risk. What's your differentiator?
So when it comes to quantifying risk, I think that there are roughly three approaches. So one approach is just the approach that insurances take. The problem with insurances is that they don't have the same incentive as you as a company, because they have a portfolio of companies, and some of you will get hacked, but you know, they'll still make money. Right. So like they're not that worried about the specificity of your risk as long as you don't break the distribution. So if you're like a Maersk type of risk where you cost $1 billion, then that's a little annoying for them. But besides that, you're just a number and an average. So they don't really care about your risk. In the end, you still end up paying most of the risk. So even if they cover you, in the end, you're going to have tail risk that you have to pay months and years after the crash, right? And, right. And they don't pay that. It's not in the insurance. Then the second way is our companies that are kind of trying to quantify risk. They use a bit of averages and they have some model about your company. It's a little bit like the insurance, but it's more tailored towards you. So I think that this can be an interesting approach, you know, that can be beneficial for a lot of companies. And I'd say we are in the third category where we try to be more grounded in what we're saying. And we think that the most grounded approach is to actually understand how the attacker makes money. So we look at your company and we understand how tasty you are, coming back to what I was saying before,
right,
how attractive you are to the attacker. And we put a dollar on you as if if you were to be hacked, that's how much they would be willing to spend. And based on that number, we know the types of techniques and sophistication they can use to hack you. And based on your attack surface, everything that you have out there, and some more information about your company, we can know, well, what is the probability that they will succeed and which path will they take to actually hack you? And in doing so, we can say, well, if you cut those paths, if you make that much more difficult, you reduce the profitability of the attacker, you make it a lot less attractive to them. And therefore, there's probably someone who will run less path than you do, and they look probably more tasty than you
right.
do.
And the bear will eat them. Yeah.
And the bear will eat them most likely and not you. That's not to say that, you know, if you're up against the government, you're still going to lose. Because, I mean, at least the top ones, you know, and I've been in government, I know what they can do. It's a different level. But for most of us, it's not a concern. We're concerned against the profit-seeking attacker who sees us as attractive. And so that's what we need to remediate.
See, I love that. I think that that's fascinating. And I never really considered a quantitative analysis from the attacker standpoint. Because when you do like, say run a taxonomy like FAIR, factor analysis of information risk, you're more looking at your, what I believe that they term cost exposure. So you're looking at internally, what is this going to cost me? And therefore making the determinations one way or the other, which way you want to go. But your approach is you're looking externally, what is it going to benefit them? And then therefore that's going to change the likelihood. I love that. I think that's, I have not heard that before. I don't know what else to say. I think that's great.
and you're spot on. I think FAIR also has its place, you know, but I think that the real solution is actually combining both.
Right.
Because once you know what the attacker does, then there's a question of what you do. And once you know what you do, there's a question of what the attacker does in response to that. And that's actually what game theory does. And once you want to model like a two-player system, that's what you need to do. You cannot just look at, hey, that's what I could lose. Yeah, but if the attacker makes nothing from that, he's not going to make you lose unless he can ransom you. In that case, what you can lose becomes interesting to him, but it's not always true. And so it gets a little bit technical, but it's essentially it's more grounded to look at what is in there for him than taking an average of companies just like you, right? Which is, I mean, sure, it makes for a nice report, but is that actually predictive?
Well, it makes for a nice report. It probably has nice colors in it as well, too, because executives love colors. So I understand that X80 is more geared towards larger enterprises, right? Your customer base. Well, what is basically your customer base?
So, you know, mostly focused on banks, insurance companies, some software companies that have a lot of IP, or it could also be logistics or manufacturing, but those are companies that typically are on like $1 billion revenue a year or more,
right?
With some exceptions. And yeah, so that's mostly the target. And usually they have like some form of data, whether it's intellectual property or PIIs or medical data that would hurt a lot if they were compromised.
Yeah, and a lot of times, especially the intellectual property can be quite, particularly if you're talking governmental contracts and all of that. I mean, that could be very tasty. I'm going to start using that word now. That could be very tasty to the bad guys. But even with for the folks that are listening that are small and mid-sized business folks, even just that philosophical approach, thinking about looking at your quantification of risk from external, what is it worth to them, is at the very least, I would submit, a good exercise to go through. And that's something that I'm certainly going to take away from this. I love that approach. It's got
to
be
there. I would add something. I would just add something that's actually very relevant to what you do, and also maybe a way for you to talk to them, is that even though they may not have directly, they may not be very tasty directly, they may actually be a massive supply chain risk to their customers. So if they have enterprise customers, those small businesses must be secure, because, you know, it's a lot more profitable for them to hack that company through them than to go directly through the company itself.
Yeah, and
so that's where they need.
Yeah, and a good example in the United States is the push for CMMC and downstream vendors to be CMMC compliant. That's a big, big deal going on right now. So good point, and I'm glad that you added that, Simon. I gotta imagine, though, that not only just being in cyber, but certainly founding a company and running a company and growing a company, there's a lot of stress involved. I gather that you do a lot of traveling, just involved with that. You got to step away from it every now and then. We've got a huge problem in our field of we just tend to take on too much sometimes, and we keep it within ourselves, and we're not meant to be stressful 24/7. So I always encourage folks to make sure that they're doing something outside of cyber and business ownership. What's one of the things you do to get away?
So I actually do martial arts. I do jiu-jitsu, MMA, Thai boxing, and also love dancing. So I dance Latin dances. And so I can't complain. I think that I'm managing stress pretty well.
Well, now don't combine the two, right? Because if you do the two at the same time, that could be pretty bad.
it's all in the contrast. The balance is in the contrast.
Well, that's very good. It's very, very good. I would hate to be your opponent on a day when you were just dealing with some stress in the job, because I would imagine that might fuel a little bit more like any match that you're in. So, but that's good. Anything physical helps, of course, clear out the toxins in the body and clears the mind. So, well, future plans. What future plans do you have for X80 or for yourself or both?
So I think that this philosophy of looking at what's in it for the attacker and then understanding what's the consequence for us financially, I think that there's very little about that. So I'm going to be trying to produce more content, more literature on this, so that it gets studied a bit more rationally. And besides that, in terms of companies, well, you know, we have pretty aggressive goals and milestones. So I'd be glad to, I hope to have good news to report. So
I'm going to be looking for that. I again, one of the reasons why I love doing this podcast series is that I almost every single time when I talk to somebody, I learn something new or get a different perspective. And you're the 105th person that I've spoken to in the last year and a half. And every time it's something new. I never really took that mental journey to think about how tasty am I to somebody else. I don't like the mental image in my head of being somebody, a bear eating me, but I'm going to run with it anyway. So,
no, it's not a fun thing, but it's what it looks, how it looks to them. And that's what determines what they're going to do.
Absolutely. Well, Simon, thank you so much for spending a few minutes with me today. I really, really enjoyed the conversation.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Greg. It was a pleasure.
Everybody, stay secure.